Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And so, as the snow begins falling on this evening of the 8th day of February, 2016, the snows from Winter Storm Cletus, or Winter Storm Eustace, or Winter Zebediah, well, I don't know. I just know it's going to be colder than hell here this week. We begin a brand new broadcast week. Yes? Let's see. I'm checking here to make sure we're on the air, because I just saw a note come in from Randy in PA saying we aren't. By God, we are now. How about that? Yes. This program is live. It is the 8th day of February, 2016. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And if you got, if you run over to, Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. There. Okay. Good. If you run over to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and click chat room, you can jump into the midst of the madcap multimedia real-time live extravaganza that is the ongoing discussion that takes place during the program when it's live every evening. And we say, of course, good evening, Anatole and Laborman and Texas T, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators Lottie and Sparky. More will be wandering by presently. Yes, yes, yes. Like I said, 8th day of February, 2016, live program. And more in Monday. But before we go any further, let me also note that this is a special day. This is a birthday day. It's the birthday of two people about whom I care very much. One of whom is my daughter, Margie. It is Margie's birthday today. And The other person is John Fox. And, of course, by now, it's not John Fox's birthday anymore because John Fox is in Australia. And now it's the 9th day of February 2016 there. So, but, you know, happy birthday, John, and happy birthday, Margie. This is, of course, a listener-supported program. We try to raise $200 every evening, and this evening is no different. 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 12 and a half, 32 at 6 and a quarter, and of course 64 at $3.13, because we round up the half cent from the 12.5, right? Okay. So, of course, the PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com/contribute. There you can fill out all the fields. Don't worry about that field that asks you what it is that you do for Mr. Drucker down to Drucker's store there in Hooterville. No. That's what happens in Hooterville stays in Hooterville. And just get to the next screen. and that's where you make your choices, your decisions, etc. If you prefer to operate via the U.S. Postal Service, and some do, the mailing address is The Horn, 1038 Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V 25801. With the gentle reminder that that's checks and money orders only. Cash tends to be pilfered somewhere along the way, or can be, and has been. But they should be made payable to The Horn, not Bob Kincaid. And Boss Man Wayne will be tickled pink when he goes by the goes by the mailbox, puts on his spider-proof gloves, and reaches into the echo chamber for whatever might be there. Thank you very kindly, Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions. You're on. Hallelujah. Glory. And thank you also to Thomas over at FYINation.com, loud and clear on FYINation.com. And an added note, Mike Malloy is back tonight right after this program. Yay! The brand new and, dare we say, improved Mike Malloy, possibly? Yeah? That comes your way at 9 o'clock, 9:06. Did the start time change? I don't know about that part. I don't know. So here it is. It's the day after the Super Bowl. The day after the most singularly dull football, Super Bowl at least, not dull, but the most singularly dull Super Bowl in a very, very long time. We had a real nice streak of exciting Super Bowls for a while. Those of you of a certain age will remember the blowout era. Yeah, that wasn't much fun, unless you were rooting for the winning team. But no, it's also more in Monday, which is convenient. It is very convenient, because what that means is we've got a harmonic convergence of morality. Because for some reason or another, there's something special about the Super Bowl or any public spectacle, I suppose. Yes, as a matter of fact, Carol, the Concussion Bowl, because as The Onion noted, this year's Super Bowl confetti was made entirely from shredded concussion reports. Mm-hmm. But with any public spectacle, there's always something. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. There, it only took me 8 minutes. There's always something to get the right wing pout rage machine fired up and chugging along. And this year was no different. Oh, they're all terribly, terribly upset. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Most of the ire being reserved for Beyonce. Mm-hmm. The police are mad. Sheriffs are mad. Rudy Giuliani is mad. Michelle Malkin's mad. Oh, they're all terribly, terribly, terribly angry at Beyonce because, well, she was dressed entirely too skimpy. Never mind the fact that she was. Well, I mean, nothing came loose. There were no wardrobe malfunctions. There was no Janet Jackson breast of doom. There was a retrospective of a lot of people who had performed at the Super Bowl. Was it just me, or was Janet not in there? No. Her brother was. Oh, yeah. But there was the bandoliers and the short black jacket and the black leotard and the fishnet hose and the I don't know, was the guy from the New York Times there to complain about her gyrating? Well, he didn't necessarily have to be. Who needs a prudish sports writer Who needs a prudish sports writer when you've got none other than, well, Rudy Giuliani?
Meanwhile, let's fast forward to halftime. Coldplay was the main featured performer, which a lot of people weren't crazy about going in, weren't crazy about going out, but he got help from Bruno Mars, who was fantastic, and Beyonce was in there too.
A couple of things. I thought the minute Chris Martin started singing, he heard those songs back to back to back, he realized why Coldplay was there. Then we lost him for about an hour, and then everybody else came up. I love the flashbacks in other performances. I'm surprised that Janet Jackson didn't make the cut. I wonder why on that. But they went back other 50 years of great halftime performances. And then at the end we find out, I couldn't really make out what Beyonce was saying. But in the end, we find out that Beyonce dressed up in a tribute to the Black Panthers, went to a Malcolm X formation, and the song, the lyrics, which I couldn't make out a syllable, were basically telling cops to stop shooting blacks.
And I gotta be honest. So-
hey, I couldn't understand a word that that young negress was saying. Not a word. But she was telling the cops to stop shooting the other black people. I couldn't tell a word she was saying, though.
I had no idea when this was going on. Yeah.
She performed her single Formation, which has become a rallying cry for the Black Lives Matter movement. We're going to talk a little bit about that.
Oh, let's don't and say we didn't.
He's going to be with us in 1 hour. In the meantime, let's go up.
He loves music.
He is, everybody knows, America's musician.
Yeah, okay, so we're going to go ahead and show you.
All right, they said Sherman set the way up machine for an hour later, and Steve Doocy and Brian Kilmeade and some attack blonde that I don't know who she is are sitting there on the couch with America's mayor, Rudy, noun, verb, and 9/11, Giuliani.
The event of Beyonce.
Hockey puck. It's not too early. It's never too early for the hockey puck.
His performance with Coldplay and Bruno Mars. But Beyonce got a police escort there, and then she gives a salute to the Black Lives Matter movement. Dre McKesson tweeted out, hashtag formation, shout outs to Malcolm X and MJ were excellent. It was a nod to 1966 founding of the Black Panther Party. What did you think of that?
I think it was outrageous. The halftime show, I thought it was ridiculous anyway. I don't know what the heck it was. A bunch of people like bouncing around and doing strange things.
They look good. That's
right. Hey, they were bouncing and gyrating with their gyrating bouncers. I don't know what this is. Oh, goodness me, Ethel, what is this world a-coming to?
It was terrible.
It's Coldplay
I actually even know why we have this. I mean, this is
football.
You've got
to do something at halftime.
This is football, not Hollywood. Yeah. And I thought it was really outrageous that she used it as a platform to attack police officers, who are the people who protect her and protect us and keep us alive and what we should be doing. In the African-American community, in all communities, is build up respect for police officers.
Absolutely. That's what we need to be doing in the African-American community. Listen to me, cranky old white guy, as I white-splain to America what the Negroes need to be doing these days. What was she saying there?
And focus on the fact that when something does go wrong, okay, We'll work on that, but the vast majority of police officers risk it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, when the police roll up and within 2 seconds blow away a little 12-year-old boy with a toy pistol, we'll just say, "Okay, back up. What happened there?" And we'll just rewind everything, and the little boy will get all undead. We'll get it right this time, and we'll just haul him off into the prison industrial complex after beating the living bejesus out of him for a little bit. But we've got to come together on this, don't you? Where's my applesauce?
Lives to keep us
safe. Mr. Mayor, I also look at the NFL. What do? They took control of the halftime because they didn't like what MTV was doing after Janet Jackson got her
nipple of doom.
That happened. happened. So then they go and review this and say, wait a second, why
can't you figure out who you're putting on? I mean, this is a political position. She's probably going to take advantage of it. You're talking to middle America when you have the Super Bowl. So if you can have entertainment, let's have, you know, decent, wholesome entertainment and not.
Yeah, why can't we dig up Rudy Valley and let him croon to us a little bit there? I'm sure some of these young people, I'm sure they would appreciate his musical stylings. Absolutely. I mean, God damn it, I'm waiting on the applesauce.
Use it as a platform to attack the people who, put their lives at risk to save us.
When you think of Beyonce, I think, you know, some people think of Jay-Z. I think of Tucker Carlson.
You know what we need to have? We need to have the halftime show start with some wrong-colored people merrily singing happy cotton-picking songs. And some of those Negro spirituals for which they are so justifiably famous and displaying that magnificent sense of rhythm that they have and looking like they're all so terribly happy to have a job picking that cotton. What does a guy got to do to get some fucking applesauce around here? Oh, Fox, you never... never fail to disappoint, but that wasn't all. Let's see, who else didn't like it? National Sheriff's Association or something was having their clavern meeting in Washington, D.C., and they had a Super Bowl party at the J.W. Marriott, and when that uppity one got on, And those strippers wearing those berets with their natural dues and their black power salutes. Well, the National Sheriff's Association, by God, turned off the television as a protest. They were protesting the fact that Beyonce was protesting the fact that police have this ugly habit of killing lots of young black people. And paying homage to people who died in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina, and sticking their fists in the air and complaining about police brutality, and then the Chicago Code Blue. They called for a boycott, and they used their Blue Lives Matter avatar on social media. Oh, Jesus Christ. But that wasn't even it. Oh, hell no. No, there was more to be poutraged about. There was, after all, you know, that thing that happened with the end of the Super Bowl halftime festivities with all the cards that spelled out a message. And it was a disgusting, filthy, revolting message that no God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Christian in America, the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever in the universe. Amen. Hallelujah. One nation under God. Post no bills. Use no hooks. This end up forever. It would approve of. Yes, you know what I'm talking about. That message that said, I believe in love. Jesus Christ. Well, yeah, he kind of believed in it. Next thing you know, we'll be having halftime shows where they say, they spell out, love thy neighbor as thyself. God damn, that's just sickening. Disgusting. Why can't we have something patriotic like cards displaying the
the most patriotic lynchings of the 20th century. I mean, my God. But it wasn't just the I believe in love part that was revolting. Oh, my God, I can't believe I said that again. No, it was it was the colors, I mean, there was all kinds of colors. I mean, there was like red and blue and yellow and green and orange and violet and indigo. Oh, Jesus, is that a rainbow? Oh, that. They were trying to use the homosexual waves to homosexualize the entire United States of Merca. Ha ha, no reverb. Oh, wow. Oh, there was even black in there. Blackness. Black. Yeah. And all of this necessarily got the right wing into a lather as well. Because, yes, they did. They said that they were pretty sure that that was an attempt to Homer sectionalize Merca. You know, with a halftime show. And, yeah, I don't know, maybe that works on some people. Michelle Malkin was having a fit. Laura Floorcrawler Ingram was having a fit. Wait, was it Laura Floorcrawler Ingram, or is it Ann Floorcrawler Coulter? I can't remember who. There was a story. And then of course, you know, the general indecency of Beyonce. I don't know who Lila Rose is. They kindly explained. She is an anti-choice activist. And she took to the Twitters, and Beyonce show could have been just as good if they'd all worn pants. Beauty doesn't need to be vulgar. Families are watching. Wait a minute, you want the women to wear pants? You're into cross-dressing, Lila Rose? What? Oh, Jesus. Oddly enough, speaking of dancewear, and why can't they wear pants? During the Super Bowl, I saw a clip passed around showing Debbie Reynolds from some really terrible 1953 musical in which she was dressed in a little, it was like a little form-fitting brown swimwear cap and little matching booties and, you know, shoes. No, the different meaning, different generation, different era. Okay, the booties, shoes. And a matching leotard in which she was the football who was passed around and run with and thrown about in a musical about football, I guess, but it was filthy. It would have been filthy if it had been performed by, you know, one of those. The multi-hued card display, Carol says, it worked. I got my gay on. I listened to good music. So gay. Carol asked, did I miss the part where they performed the abortion on the at halftime too? Oh, just give the right wing a chance. I'm sure that they're probably playing Beyonce backwards even as we speak. Well, thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Asa says, you do the cranky old man so well, it's uncanny, Bob. I worry for your future. Oh, it's not going to be a pretty future. No. Banana! Oddly enough, I've been playing cranky old people since I was about 14 years old. I guess I've got a knack. And then one thing that I haven't seen pop up on the zeitgeist radar, as it were, that got my attention. You know, okay, we so other people are having fits about like I said, it's a beautiful national spectacle because it allows every aggrieved human being on the planet, and probably some aggrieved plasma things from Norblap 9 to get their grievance on. Some I agree with more than others. The marmot commercial was kind of weird. Just because I don't go in for that whole interspecies thing. And yes, Willem Dafoe as Marilyn Monroe. I'll never be able to see the subway great scene again the same way. Thanks, Willem. But the one that got my attention, the one that tells me, because the Super Bowl commercials are somewhat barometric as to the culture. The one that got me was the ad for OIC. And it featured a little CGA ball of pink ball of intestines during a national secular holiday, with granted militaristic and religious overtones. Give me a second here. And I'm trying to. Yeah, okay. I wasn't the only one that thought it a little bit weird. These ads are extremely expensive. And so the fact that we had an ad for opioid-induced constipation. It was telling to me. That means that there is enough opioid, there are enough opioid-induced constipation sufferers in the United States for them to be demographically worth the cost of a Super Bowl ad. And that's a lot of money. And I was at a gathering, some friends, and we were all just kind of looking at each other. Right? I mean, I know opioids do that, and I know it's a problem. And apparently, although there was no overt mention that I could see of an actual drug, it was brought to you by AstraZeneca. Mm-hmm. And then came the next ad that Xyphazan was the one with the smiling pink ball of guts. I mean, come on. It's the Super Bowl. People are at parties, munching down on wings, eating barbecue, chips, guacamole, salsa, all kinds of stuff. Look at that. And somewhere there's an ad agency that got just an absolute horse-gagging boatload of money for coming up with a CGI ball of guts. And so we know that that is officially on the cultural radar now. And it really, I mean, it, by God, I will be hollering for my applesauce in a minute. But that, it, but the game, the game just stunk. I mean, to the extent that it was a defensive struggle, okay, I'm all right with those. I guess both defense. Well, I mean, Peyton Manning was nothing special. Cam Newton was even less so. And the defenses were the stars of the game, particularly the Broncos defense. They were able to just run. I think they had all 11 guys on the line a few times. Just make Cam Newton stay in the pocket, make Cam Newton beat you with his arm, and he couldn't do it. And that meant they didn't have to respect the pass or the run, so they just came after him all day. And we saw how that worked out. Mm-hmm. Marty lets us know that commercial cost for a 30-second spot yesterday was $5 million. And I'm pretty sure the cute little pink ball of guts was a 60. Sure seemed like it. And Marty says that game did not stink. Yeah, it stunk, Marty. It was terrible. It was boring as hell. Steve in New York, meanwhile, says, I'm outraged. Forget the ISIL. I want the name of that fifth dentist who doesn't recommend sugarless gum for his or her patients who chew gum. Damn it. Yeah. Meanwhile, a note comes from Steve in China. Subject lesson, hysteria lesson, or subject line, hysteria lesson. Bob, does anyone not watch the Super Bowl for the football? Of course not. And think of the advertising revenue generated as millions of viewers await the strategic wardrobe failure, only to ignore whatever it is that's taking place on the playing field. Super Bowl is our most lucrative holiday. Remember Jane Mansfield? She of the blonde bombshell clan, running her own, ruining her own acting career with this sort of busted seam, spilled tit nonsense? But that was over 50 years ago, Grandma. You're right. Yep. Oh, with the pink ball of guts ad, Carol notes, it's okay, Don Draper signed off on it. tell me, okay, Marty, tell me how that game did not stink. Because the one I watched was just awful. I mean, I don't even know, I yawned and went home. I don't even know who the most valuable player was. Ron and Raleigh with subject line, damn, says, sweet screaming Jesus Christ on a whole wheat cracker. What the hell do these people want? How about next year they have Up With People do the halftime show? Perhaps they could appear in burkas or chatters. These folks have assholes so tight they crap BBs. That big. So we are... We are off and running. Okay, I remember now. See, I was getting all geographical on Marty, but I suddenly remember Marty's a Denver fan. Okay, so the game didn't suck for Denver fans. But, I mean, even for Denver fans, I mean, was it thrilling, exciting? I mean, Marty says, hey, I watched the game for the football. Granted, the Broncos won. That's why it didn't stink. Okay, yeah, Von Miller was the MVP, Broncos linebacker. Well, that makes sense. They probably should have just given the MVP award collectively to the entire defense. So now are we going to have to watch the ball of guts ad? Bundle of guts. That's better. That's better linguistically. Are we going to have to watch the bundle of guts ad for the next 6 months? Because I don't find that prospect at all pleasant. Yeah, and I say that to you as someone who has, well, my guts aren't a bundle. I was born with a birth defect that. How about that? Born with a birth defect. It's tough when you get a birth defect that, you know, shows up when you're, you know, 60. No, I have a birth defect called it's not inversus. Malrotated bowel. I know, that sounds almost as much fun as bundle of guts. But the fact of the matter is, because of the way I've got a bundle of guts, it's all over there in one side, and it doesn't just no. Metabolic syndrome. I've got that too. And so I'm sensitive to issues relating to the digestive tract. Oh, the bundle of guts commercial was for IBS, irritable bowel syndrome. The other one was for that did not feature a pink CGI bundle of guts was for opioid-induced constipation. Oh, there we go. Okay, thank you, Herman. The Debbie Reynolds football clip is a 1953 MGM film titled "I Love Melvin." Okay, yeah, because it was Debbie Reynolds and Donald O'Connor, who, according to the thing I read, was reviewed as being full of beans, which may actually mean that that's a digestive reference, too. I hope this is not a trend that's developing for the rest of the program, dadgummit. So we've gotten that out of the way now. Hey, we can talk about it more if you want to later in the program, but I think we've pretty much worn it out. But people were saying, and I'm not going to offer an opinion one way or the other on this one. Now people were complaining that the Snickers ad was transphobic, and that the Marmot ad was homophobic. I get the idea. I've seen them both, and the idea of showing, you know, of course, it's always funny. Whenever we show a guy in a dress, because, hey, look at there. There's a guy in a dress. Of course, he don't really want to be. They paid him money to wear that dress, so that's okay. He ain't no weirdo. Right? No, I get that. And, yeah, it's kind of straight. Well, because drag is always funny, right? Mrs. Doubtfire and Tootsie. Well, okay. But the Marmot one, well, I just sort of evaded me, I guess. Thank you. Thank you very kindly. Danny writing in from Louisiana, Stan. You're on fire today, Bob. I give up after typing at length about Rudy the Fraudster et al. I'm just totally fucking disgusted by these losers. I deleted all I typed because they're not worth my required finger movements. You're doing just great. It'll be a great day for me, though, when I hear all these charlatans have finally just died already. And my life is supposed to be meaningless? Well, I must admit, maybe it is because it doesn't pay near as well as peddling fear to the ignorant, stupid, grizzled, and hagged out like the morning morons watching Fox. Carry on, my friend. Signed, Danny. Thank you, Danny. I will do my absolute best. Yeah, that subject line. Oh, your God. Because it's not Danny's. I get it. I seem to have kind of let the program get away from me. Let's back up a moment, shall we?
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
That's right. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. It's Moran Monday on the horn. See how it can get sometimes. The Morans start burbling out of this thin cybernetic veil of canvas we call the Moran Monday tent. They get completely away from you. But there's still a lot of them left inside the tent here. Friends and neighbors, kiddies and cousins, aunts and uncles. Come on by. Yes, indeed. For less than 17 cents per hour of programming for every $10 a month subscriber, they're all here. The birthers, the deathers, the ninthers, the tenthers, the baggers, the booger eaters, the birchers, the libertarians, the Republicans, one and all who populate the Moran Monday tent. Yes, indeed. You will not be disappointed. No, siree, not at all. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this here's the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. We do, of course, always issue an advisory to anyone stepping inside the Moran Monday tent that you want to hang on to wallets, purses, children, small animals, the little fish in the fishbowl that you want over at the ping pong game. Hang on tight, because the Morans can get grabby. Oh, yes. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Oh, my God, you will. We already are. And then there's little Marco Rubio. Precious little fellow that he is. Who apparently the record stuck. I trust some of you actually tormented yourselves by watching that pathetic display of fear-mongering and hatred that passes for a Republican debate. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What was the official phrase? The magic word, whatever. Barack Obama. Aw, damn it. I had it. It was an attempt to differentiate little Marco from the rest of the crowd by pointing out that, no, he did not think Barack Obama was an idiot. He knows that Barack Obama is an evil genius. Evil genius. Really. Let's see. And let's dispel once and for all with this fiction that Barack Obama doesn't know what he's doing. He knows exactly what he's doing. Barack Obama is undertaking a systematic effort to change this country, to make America more like the rest of the world. That's why he passed Obamacare and the stimulus and Dodd-Frank and the deal with Iran. It is a systematic effort to change America. When I'm president of the United States, we're going to re-embrace all the things that made America the greatest nation in the world, and we're going to leave our children with what they deserve, the single greatest nation in the history of the world. Well, that ended perfectly, didn't it? Then, shortly thereafter, let's dispel with this fiction that Barack Obama doesn't know what he's doing. He knows exactly what he's doing. Here's the bottom line. This notion that Barack Obama doesn't know what he's doing is just not true. He knows exactly what he's doing. He knows what he's doing. That's why he's done the things he's done. And that was, you know, that was supposed to be, according to the wrestling tip sheet. That was his debate. He was going to surge out in front of T. Rump and Ayatollah Ted and show us what a real leader was made of. Granted, a real, very small leader. But see, nobody told Marco that there's a sign outside the White House that says, "You must be at least this tall to lead the nation." So at his first event this morning, lo and behold, because politics is fun, there they were, waiting for him at the pancake breakfast. The Rubio 3000 robots. Mm-hmm. And the fact that Chris Christie, who is twice the man Marco Rubio will ever be, not really, maybe three times. The fact that Chris Christie called him out on it was just delicious. You know, there it is, the 25-second soundbite. So they're at Londonderry High School in New Hampshire this morning. A couple of cardboard robots were waiting on Marco Polo. Yeah. And they sat there and just repeated, "Let's dispel with this fiction that Barack Obama doesn't know what he's doing. He knows exactly what he's doing." And that's all the robots would say. Mm-hmm. First it was the water. Now this. The shoes. Shoes, Henry, the shoes. Mm-hmm. So 800 people turned out to hear him this morning at what had been billed as a pancake breakfast. Mm-hmm. A pancake breakfast. Only there were no pancakes. Yeah. Yeah. So... one Rubio campaigner said, "I don't know where they got the idea to come at 8:30. Nobody said that. People just got here early. It's because there was an invitation that went out for an 8:30 pancake breakfast. Charlie Pierce quotes a guy, a Rhode Island lawyer named Bob Durant, as saying, "It's the Marco Rubio pancake breakfast. So far, we've had no pancakes and no Marco Rubio. If you're lucky, you'll get out with breakfast, and that'll be a win." So, no pancakes. No fruit cup. I guess that means no applesauce. So when Marco finally showed up, Marco, he said, "I hope they fed you." "Yeah, sure, Marco. Hope in one hand and pour pancake batter in the other." And wait, there was no pancake batter. But I guess There was a climate change. There was a climate change question. Mm-hmm. Marco says, if we pass the bill, if we pass a climate change bill, how many feet of sea rise will it prevent? It won't prevent any sea rise. How many degrees of temperature will it avoid going up? It won't do that either. So, you know, why bother? Mm-hmm. Ready on day one. Wasn't that the old talk? Yeah, right, yeah. And we haven't even got to a whole bunch of the stuff, because God knows there's an abundance of it. You remember Ted? Remember Ayatollah Ted's sleazy little tricks in Iowa? Well, they're still being played in New Hampshire. Mailers are going around that are made to look like official Senate correspondents with Ted Cruz's name on them, that also contain the words "check enclosed," and when you open it, it's not a real check. It's a fake check. It's a fraudulent check. It's a dummied up, faked up, ginned up, rubed up carnival midway check made out to Ted Cruz. And you're supposed, you, hapless New Hampshire voter, are supposed to write your name and send Ted Cruz money. How long before they send well, I mean, New Hampshire's tomorrow, right? So, no, not so much. And meanwhile, Jennifer in Australia says, and then trust Jeb to be even more dumb by saying, "I've always thought he was gifted," said Bush. "He's charismatic. He lights up a room. He has an extraordinary message to tell, all of which is something to be admired. But he's never been challenged in his life. He's young." This is as regards little Marco. Oh, yeah, Master Polo is like four, but challenged? Really? Jeb, you soft dough pant load. When has Cushy Bush ever been tested? Asshole. Oops. Doughy pant load. Yes, doughy pant load. Please clap. Please. Meanwhile, Heather up in Michigan says, going back to that tweet about, because we had a mention of the word pants, I saw the right-wing nut job Lila Rose tweet to, showed it to a friend of mine about Beyonce and pants. She was covered. Lila Rose is a biatch. If Beyonce wants to make a statement about how black people are being treated in this country, she should. I get it. She's a black woman. Why is this a surprise? Exactly, Heather. Exactly. Ooh, that's cold. Brother Deacon Asa says, Marco Polio is more appropriate. He's a disease. Oh, you're gonna... I'm not going to disagree. And the mailers, the Ayatollah Ted mailers, check enclosed. Those are going out to people in New Jersey. And it looks like it's come from his Senate office. Of course, this is not a violation of any sort of election law, because really, in this country, we don't have any sort of election law. Here's the letter. Dear conservative. Well, that's personal. Dear fellow conservative, I'll get right to the point. Your contribution of $45 to Cruz for president, as long as you respond quickly, will be immediately matched for double the amount. It's going to be filthy, 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 filthy all the way to November. And all we can do is just, I don't know, put on some sort of ideological condom and let it, you know, let it ride. So that's the filibobster for this Moran Monday. Other stuff has been going on. In the midst of the Flint water crisis, the teabagger legislature of the state of Michigan has seen fit to outlaw anal sex? Really? Yes, really? Because is that what lead poisoning makes? I don't know, but they did. Carol Baker pointing out, I'm waiting for them to arrest Governor Snyder, the Michigan Republican, since he's the one making Flint residents take it up the rear. And yeah, they did just did that. Contrary to the fact that it's unconstitutional. What is it? It's Lawrence. Lawrence is the Supreme Court case. But remember, it was just last Moran Monday, I think, when we had the mayoral candidate from Busted Knuckle, North Carolina, or wherever, who said he was going to arrest the homosexual. Because if it says it's a felony, it's a felony. And never mind the whole Lawrence. Is it U.S. v. Lawrence? No. Why do I suddenly have a hankering for a waffle? I don't know. So you know how to reach the program, right? Skype to Skype is Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. Email comes into bobkincaid@gmail.com. You can reach me on Twitter, @BobKincaid. I'm Bob Kincaid on Facebook, as well as Hillbilly Elitist at Instagram. Yes. So all of those options are available to you if you want to get involved with the program, if you want to carry on a conversation, cuss, discuss, et cetera, et cetera. We'll take a little break and come back and find out which way the program's going to go. Okay? And just a gentle reminder, this is a listener-supported radio program. We try to raise $200 every evening, and thus far we are at, what's the word I'm looking for? Zero. Now, to be fair, thanks need to go out. Thank you very kindly indeed. We had a deficit. We ended the week with a deficit of about $300. And thanks to at Lawrence versus Texas. Thank you, Stephen, New York. But thanks to a number of listeners, including Susie and Debbie, and Randy, and a couple of subscriptions along the way. Our old lawn mowing buddy, my lawn mowing buddy, Dennis in Kentucky. Let me see here. And then I also applied the Herald. Herald's secret open carry to the total. So we'll be we've got sufficient funds to round up every odd number or every piece of loose change to the next dollar. But the wonderful thing is that we cleared that deficit over the weekend. So all we got to do is raise this evening's $200, which it would be great if we went ahead and did that. So if you want to fire up the phones, the stress line, of course, 304-663-4676. You're welcome to do that. 304-574-8178 is the other line. And like I said, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. Lots of opportunities, lots of possibilities. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn, More and Monday, and we'll be back. Oh, I mean, you knew I was going to do this, didn't you?
much technology. Machines to save our lives. Machines dehumanize.
The time has come at last.
Secret, secret, I've got a secret.
To throw away this mask.
Secret, secret, I've got a secret.
Now everyone can see.
Secret, secret, I've got a secret.
Who are you?
Who?
No. You can tell that song hasn't aged well because all the parts of the Thoroughly Modern Man, yes, modern, not modern, modern, the Thoroughly Modern Man are now made in China. Nope, shut up, Bob. 6 minutes past the hour as we begin hour number two of this Moran Monday on the horn. And I got a note a couple of minutes ago from Robert in Australia. They outlawed anal sex? Well, you know, all the kids are going to want to do it now. Banned in Lansing. Oh, and just a little bit of fun. Is there anything about the campaign of Ayatollah Ted that isn't fraudulent? Duck Doofus, Phil Robertson, was invited in all his hirsute, sunglassed, camo glory onto some program on Fox News hosted by that Neil Cavuto creature. And was invited to explain why it is that he supports Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the man who forgot to become an American for a really long time. And this is what transpired. No, that still sticks. Quit it. All right, let's try this again.
Such as Willie and yourself, when they let some slick talker lead them down a path that they don't want to go, Neil.
Oh,
look,
no,
the
I
reason
see
I'm
where
for,
you're going. Okay.
The reason, oh, you bet. The reason I'm going for Cruz is that Cruz loves God and James Madison, for crying out loud. James Madison, Neil, was the man who said, we've staked the whole of American civilization not upon the power of government, not on the power of government, far from it. He said, we've staked all of our political institutions on the capacity of each of ourselves to govern ourselves, control ourselves, and sustain ourselves based on the Ten Commandments of God. Therefore, Cruz trusts God. True, Cruz trusts James Madison. That's why, Neil, I trust Cruz. You understand what I'm saying?
Well, we understand what you're trying to say there, Duck Doofus. And we understand that you've had a very profitable career making devices that make ducks think you want to have sex with them. Yes. But there's only one problem with that whole line of, and I'm using the word very, very loosely here, reasoning. And that's this. James Madison never said anything anywhere near that. As I said, it's hard to find anything relating to the Ayatollah Ted campaign that isn't a fraud, that hasn't been ginned up in some back room by some filthy political operative And this is no different. The right wing has built a cottage industry out of making up founder quotes and Lincoln quotes and Washington quotes and Jefferson quotes and, yes, Madison quotes. And they all seem to always find their way back to a charlatan by the name of David Barton, who just makes crap up, who once published a book that was so full of lies that his own right-wing publisher wouldn't publish it. And there's a fascinating book out there by Chris Rodda, R-O-D-D-A. She's brilliant. She's the senior research director at the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. She wrote a book called Liars for Jesus. But there are so many of the damn things, liars and lies, that she's had to come out with Volume 2. And in Volume 2, there's an entire chapter about this particular non-quote. The earliest verifiable appearance of the quote, Chris Rodda writes, is somewhere around 1958 in a calendar that was published by a bunch called the Spiritual Mobilization. And that's had something to do with a magazine called, get this, Progressive Calvinism. We have staked the whole future of American civilization not upon... Wait, this is James Madison. He's from Virginia, so... slave owner. We have staked the whole future of American civilization not upon the power of government. Far from it. We have staked the future of all our political institutions upon the capacity of mankind for self-government, upon the capacity of each and all of us to govern ourselves, to control ourselves and our slaves, to sustain ourselves and our slaves according to the Ten Commandments of God. And lo and behold, they get legs, not because they're true, but because they're convenient. And apparently, it goes back to another fraud by the name of Clarence Mannion, who at one point in time was the dean of the law school at Notre Dame University and was an ardent supporter of Joseph McCarthy. Yep. Chris Rodda describes him as Glenn Beck without a blackboard to connect all his conspiracy theories on. Mannion. Among other things, Mannion said, "The left wing, please remember, is strong, well-organized, and well-financed. Many gigantic fortunes built by virtue of private enterprise under the Constitution have fallen under the direction of internationalists, one-worlders, socialists, and communists. Much of this vast hoard of money is being used to socialize the United States." See, there was actually, although not, I guess there aren't that many around who can tell us about it now, there was actually a move in the 1950s to create single, you know, universal health care. Maybe even single payer. It started in the 40s, late 40s under Harry Truman, but it got stopped cold in its tracks by that beloved president, Dwight Eisenhower, who feared it would that if everybody could go to the doctor when they were sick, the next thing you know, we'd be whistling the Internationale, celebrating May Day, sending the descendants of Henry Ford off to some dungeon in the Caucasus. Mm-hmm. So just remember, please, and this, you know, this doesn't just apply to Ayatollah Ted. This applies to any right-winger who offers up a real, live, honest-to-goodness, bona fide quote from the framers or the founders or however they're you know, putting it up that day, or even Lincoln. When they offer one of those up, you would probably be okay running and placing a $5 bet on the fact that it ain't real. Mm-hmm. This is Mannion's speech. There are three things that you must sell. You must sell the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution of the United States, and yes, the Ten Commandments of God. Because when all this was done, somebody asked James Madison why this government won't work. Nobody's ever done this to government before. It won't function. You can't treat government like this. It has no power. And Madison answered classically. He said, "We have staked the whole future of American civilization not upon the power of government, far from it, but upon the capacity of mankind for self-government." Then Madison added this, and here's what we've really forgotten. He said, "We've staked the future of our American political institutions upon the capacity of mankind for self-government." Self-government, you say? Well, that means politics, voting. No, Madison meant what he said, that the future of this country depended on our capacity to govern ourselves, to control ourselves, to restrain ourselves under the Ten Commandments of the Creator. Yeah, 1953. Now, here's the funny thing about James Madison. Just about everything that man ever said or wrote has been cataloged and documented, and via Dr. Bill O'Brien, I've been privileged to meet one of the people who has done a great deal of it. And this line, this quote, just does not exist. But they sure do wish it did. And if for a right winger, wishing and believing is all they need. It is, in fact, a surfeit. It is an abundance. Belief is everything. With the subject line, Ted Cruz and the Ten Commandments. Stephen New York says, "Here's all you need to know for Mr. Christian Godly Ted. Leviticus 19:11, in the beautiful King James way that Jesus himself spoke, 'Ye shall not steal, neither deal falsely, neither lie one to another.' See check enclosed mailer. Sincerely, Steve." And then there's Ayatollah Ted's college roommate, or roommates, one of whom is out there on Twitter and is absolutely hilarious, just picking apart Ayatollah Ted at every turn. But Ellie Schechet, I guess, Schechet. Over at Jezebel, interviewed, or questioned at least, 75 former contemporaries of Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz about their impressions of him. One woman, Sarah Haugen-Poggi, said of her class of her college days with Rafaelito, she went to where she wouldn't go to meetings that he attended, quote, "because I simply could not deal with his rudeness. He didn't become more civil or well-mannered. When anyone in my class and I talk about him, there's no one who breaks in and says, 'Come on, guys, he wasn't so bad.' Everyone, she continues saying, everyone in my class that I've talked to is horrified that he's a candidate. And then there's Michaela Beardsley, who were widely divergent in their political views. She said, I'm a classic blue state anti-death penalty pro-choice liberal. I represent everything wrong with America as far as Ted Cruz is concerned. We would just yell at each other, and when he became senator, I was like, oh my God, he called my mother a whore. Which he did. No, really. I remember telling him that my mother had two children. They really couldn't afford to have another child. They really would have struggled, and it was a very difficult, painful decision for my mother, she explained. He became vicious and made it personal before saying my mother was going to hell and was a whore. Yeah, that's the awesome guy who loves God. Of course, you know, when you're convinced that you have a special relationship with the Almighty Creator of the universe, I guess maybe you get a pass on calling other people's mamas whores. It's a good thing those Ivy League schools aren't down south, because I don't care if you're right wing, left wing, or center. You start talking about mama, somebody's going to get a broke nose. And it doesn't matter if it's a male or a female. It's hardwired in. Don't talk about mama. Another of his classmates said, I tried not to know him. I was stunned that he would be the one that ended up running for president out of our class, because he's about as telegenic as an undertaker. One mental health professional has even tried to essay an explanation for why it is that just looking at Rafaelito Cruz makes people creep out. And this is apparently breaking news. I don't have much in the way of detail. But the FBI has confirmed, one day before the New Hampshire primaries, that they have opened an investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails. Me, I'm kind of with Bernie on this. I don't give a damn. Now, everything I just looked it up. Everything I'm seeing is from like August. But Joke Toad over at MSNBC is reporting it. And I'm not broken up about it. And let's be clear. I don't particularly care about her speaking fees either. Because I expect And perhaps if we lived in a different country, I wouldn't expect this. But I expect people in politics in the United States to trade upon their political celebrity to make money out of it. And so $200,000, $600,000, $1 million, it's what they do. It's what they do. I am, on the other hand, considerably more concerned about the content of them. And Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton has apparently got some pretty tone-deaf advisors. Because after having said at the Democratic pageant Thursday night that she would look into releasing her speech transcripts, she did a nearly immediate about-face over the weekend and said, "I'll release mine when everyone else releases theirs." Well, there's really no everyone else in the Democratic primaries except Bernie Sanders. And Bernie Sanders doesn't have any speeches that he's given to Wall Street bankers. And I'm pretty sure that even if at some point in time, for reasons that is that completely evade logic, he had been invited to address some Wall Street bankers, it probably would have read like a Jeremiad, like a calling down of holy justice upon their little noggins. I suspect the "I'll release mine when they release theirs," I suspect that relates to the Republicans, because she's desperately trying to pretend that Bernie doesn't exist. But he does. The reason I think she should release her the transcripts, and she has control over them. Somebody tried that, well, you know, the organization that hired her. No. She owns her words. It's contractual. Because if you don't own your words, then people can use them in ads and things like that later on. And you don't let that happen. I acknowledge, and you're probably sick of hearing me say this, that there is a scenario under which I will have to vote for her in November. And if I do, I would like for there not to be a Republican president. And I recognize that it is difficult to look at these clowns on the other side and think, well, the American people aren't that stupid. The American people will never elect one of those. I mean, really? Seriously? What? And James points out, it's not a speaking fee, Bob, it's a bribe. Well, how many times has Bernie said, we have a political system of legalized bribery? Go read what the Kennedy kid said in the Citizens United decision. The giving of money to political candidates does not create a per se quid pro quo appearance of impropriety. Mm-hmm. But she needs to release those transcripts, because if she doesn't, somebody's going to release them for her. And if you don't think the Republican Party is sitting around sharpening its knives, waiting for an opportunity to pull a 47% on her the way it was done to Bishop Willard Romney, well, you don't understand American politics as blood sport. This stuff will come out, and if it comes out as an October surprise, I'm going to be pissed at Hillary for being so goddamn tone deaf, for being so clueless as to think that she could, you know, keep all that under wraps. And here's what's important. We've already got an idea of what's in the speeches. Because among other people, Matt Taibbi over at Rolling Stone has spoken to people who heard at least one of the speeches. And in regard to the speeches she gave about the financial meltdown, she said, "We all got into this mess together, and we're all going to have to work together to get out of it." Banker bashing, so popular within both parties, was unproductive and indeed foolish. Because that's all it is. If we complain about the fact that Wall Street was allowed to burn the economy to the ground, we're just banker bashing, and it's unproductive and foolish. Prol. And that's mild. Relatively. Hey, let's run over and talk to the marvelously coherent Diane from Kansastan.
Hi, Bob. Good evening.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm pissed. Oh, my God. But first, before I comment on the morons I'm calling about, I'll just say I wish Hillary Clinton, I wish she didn't run. I wish she was not running. It would make things easier, don't you think?
Well, it would make things manifestly easier, but unfortunately we're dealing with a candidate who thinks she has a natural-born right to be president of the United States.
And then she mismanages any opportunity she may have had or could have had. I don't know.
It's like the 1-2 sucker punch of Gloria Steinem and Madeleine Albright over the weekend.
What? Are you talking about something that happened?
Well, I mean, nobody got punched, but that's that. So on Friday night, Gloria Steinem, who has been a feminist icon for ages, was on Bill Maher.
Oh, I missed this.
And Bill Maher asked her to explain the phenomenon of young women siding with Bernie and not Hillary. And she explained that that's because young girls want to be where the boys are, and all the boys are with Bernie.
Oh, she was kidding, I hope.
No. Okay, please pardon the term, Diane. When the shitstorm started, she declared that she had misspoke. And that of course young women there were young feminist women, and of course you could be a feminist and still support Bernie.
Oh, dear God. What's happened?
But it gets worse. And you know what? I only mention this. I don't hate Gloria Steinem for saying that. She's got a lifetime of work that is noble and honorable.
Yeah.
And so this is not going to be the petard upon which her entire career gets hung.
Ms. Magazine.
But the next day, Madeleine Albright. You remember Madeleine Albright, the woman
who didn't mind taking food from Iraq, children in Iraq. Yeah,
right, mind a million children dying or whatever the number was. And when asked about it, said it was worth it.
It was worth it. Oh, right.
She stood up in, I guess, New Hampshire and declared to the audience there that any woman who doesn't, I'm paraphrasing, there's a special place in hell for any woman who doesn't vote for Hillary Clinton.
Oh, my God. Oh, dear. No, I missed all this. I was working over the weekend. I've got to start recording lectures online for stuff, and I had to use a lot of time for that. But I used to watch Bill Maher, but then I got irritated. He would irritate me. The whole thing would irritate me.
Got tired of the shtick?
Well, barking, people barking, and I don't know. I'm at the point I just want to hear one person talking for 10 minutes, at least, you know? Not just barking and butting in and jabbing and throwing darts, but seriously. Oh, this is unexpected, Bob.
I mean, Diane, if I was their campaign, I would have sent out a memo, you know, to all surrogates from H. Ree, stop helping. You're not helping. Stop helping.
No. Well, I don't know. I don't know what these people are thinking. I don't know what she's thinking. I know she's mellowed, or at least I think I know that from what I've read about her recently. But this isn't mellowing. This is just being stupid. So, well, don't know what to explain about those two. Don't know what to say about those two bookends.
Well, I'm gonna hate it when Hillary's speech transcript comes out and it's got some sort of 47% line in it.
Yeah.
Because you know who knows what I mean. What do you say when you've just gotten paid a cool half a million dollars plus for three speeches? And you go in there and it's closed doors and nobody's ever gonna and you start talking. What do you say?
I don't know, but you.
You love me. You really, really like me.
Oh, that's pathetic. But you make a good point. I mean, I really like Matt Taibbi, and I trust him as far as I would trust anyone who does in-depth reporting. Matt Taibbi and Cy Hirsch, I pay attention to them.
Yeah.
And you're saying that he's in the know about the speeches, at least to a certain extent, so... Why is she being coy about it? How can one be coy about going into the Wall Street lair and closing the doors and pretending it's just okay, but no one can know about it? I mean, we're supposed to be so... I feel like I just turned into a pretzel in saying that sentence. You know?
I do.
I mean, to wrap my mind around that, who in this day and age would think it's okay? She'll be with us. I mean, she's not going to be with us.
No. There was that moment, for instance, in the debate Thursday, where she said, "You can't," because you know when she was getting her righteous indignation on.
Oh.
It was just a withering diatribe at Bernie, and she said, "You know, you're being it's an artful smear to and you know, find one time when I changed my position based on political donations." Well, one, that's a really, really cute way talking about artful. Mm. Of describing it, but that moment in time does exist, and it comes courtesy of an interview that Bill Moyers did with Senator Warren.
I trust Bill Moyers.
Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah, I trust her too.
Who very sweetly and very gently talks about the time in the late 90s when a bankruptcy bill was going through the Congress and was headed for the White House. And she wrote an article about it, about how bad it was, and got a call saying Hillary Clinton wants to talk with you about this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And so they talked, and she explained it, and Senator Warren goes to great lengths to talk about how intelligent she was, how she got it, how she understood the ramifications and the implications, and that when she got back to D.C., the White House put the brakes on and stopped the bankruptcy bill.
Yeah.
So then, lo and behold, by the time she gets into the Senate, guess what she does?
She votes for it.
She votes for it. You remember the bankruptcy reform of the first Bush term?
I do.
And there were lots of Democrats who put the shiv in working people's backs.
Yes,
Joe Biden did.
My
senator, Robert C. Byrd, did.
But she did,
and it was after she started getting donations from Wall Street.
Yeah, and I think as you have said, and I've heard Sam Cedar say that, to this following thing. It's not so much that they have her in the room so that she'll change her mind about something. They have her in the room because they know who she is to them. She's already shown who she is. And they know her proclivities, and they know whose side she's on. And then they invite her in the room. I mean, that's what.
Well, right. I mean, that was my argument. Of course, she didn't change her position. She had that position in the first place.
Yep. Yeah.
But how many of these examples do we need? You know, mandatory minimums, welfare reform, the prison industrial complex, NAFTA. How many?
I don't need any more, and I don't like the Clintons. I'm sorry I voted for Bill Clinton.
Well, but Diane, I would never say you should be, because because November's, you know, November's are a time for pragmatism. As I said in an exchange with our good friend Chris in Germany, pragmatism is November. Idealism blooms in the spring.
Yeah.
And you know it. But the thing is, looking at all the right-wing conservative stuff that Bill Clinton did, how different would he have been from a second term of Poppy Bush?
Well, no, because Bill Clinton was about continuity of government from Poppy Bush. I mean, NAFTA was crafted by Bush Sr. and then pushed along and signed by Clinton. I know he had a Republican House and Senate to deal with during much of that time, but I mean...
But he lost. He went into office with a Democratic majority in both houses, let's remember.
Yeah,
he lost that.
Yeah, and then he went along with, I mean, wasn't NAFTA was, let's see, when was NAFTA signed? Because that was already in place from Bush Sr. That had already been crafted and laid out. And so... all I can remember right now is that it was signed by Bill Clinton, and I cannot remember what kind of House and Senate he had at the exact time he signed it. But just taking an aerial view, that's continuity of government to me either way.
Well, absolutely. And you know, with NAFTA, we have to remember that he had every labor union in this country saying, Jesus, God, please, no, don't do this.
Yeah.
We're going to hemorrhage jobs. And guess what? You know, we did.
Yes, and you know what I really hold against him? This might have been passed over his veto, quite possibly, but dismantling Glass-Steagall, bad idea.
Well, and guess what today is?
Today is
the 20th anniversary of the signing by Bill Clinton into law of the Telecommunications Act of 1996 that allowed the consolidation of the American airwaves under the control of right-wing corporations.
And, you know, you raise a good point. At each of these junctures, there was pushback, there was expert advice, there was history to look at. He went against his own constituents, especially with NAFTA. So, you know, remember the... protests in Seattle? People were not happy with trade agreements, and there were worldwide protests. I mean, these people are not Democrats. They're not Democratic. They're not. And there's continuity of government between them.
Well, you know, Dr. Bill was citing someone earlier today, Diane, and he was talking about, you know, if we use a football field analogy, there's 20 yards between the 40-yard lines. 40 to the 50, and then the 50 goes back down to the other side's 40. There's 20 yards of difference there. That's fully...
they can throw that far, right?
That's a significant percentage of the entire overall amount of the football field.
Uh-huh.
That's, you know, 40 yards is 4/10, 40%.
Yeah.
Or 20 yards is, you know, 20% of the football field. But the argument that was being made that Dr. Bill was citing to, and I can't remember who he was citing at the time, was that, you know, the difference between Bill Clinton and George H.W. Bush was not the difference between one 40-yard line and the other 40-yard line. It was between the 48-yard line and the 48-yard line. You know, 4 yards instead of
right,
instead
on
of
the
20.
Margin, and you just pass the ball. And I don't even know football, and I'm thinking, you know.
Well, I realize I'm wandering into undiscovered country when you and I start talking sports,
well,
Diane.
I mean, I mean, I've seen a football field. I've been to a football game. It's annoying. I mean, the whole thing annoys me, but not the conversation we're having. But
right. No,
and halftime. Oh, I stumbled on some horrible halftime thing on. I guess it was a halftime thing on TV last night.
Yeah, the Super Bowl was on last night.
Oh, it just. Oh, I cringe. And seriously, I don't even behave well the couple times I've been at a football game.
You'll forgive seriously. Me if I find the idea of the marvelously coherent Diane from Kansas Stand misbehaving. I just want to visualize that for a couple of minutes.
I'm going to tell, even though it's embarrassing. Okay, so the provost and president about 2 years ago decided they would have the endowed professors on the field at halftime. There were about 20 of us across the university. And I thought, well, okay, I'll go, because they're making an effort to, with all this hoopla about sports, they're integrating, they're celebrating something about academics on the field at halftime. So I'll go. And I haven't gone since. But I thought, you know, it was a nice invitation, and okay. So first of all, I have to walk a long ways to get there because it's a huge stadium and people have to park a long ways away. And then I have an umbrella in my bag and water. Well, I guess I'm not supposed to bring it in, but I'm so annoyed at the checkpoint, I just walk past it. You know, I'm just like, oh, I'm not going to have my bag checked, and walk past it. Well, I'm not saying that's the worst misbehavior in the world, but I mean, it just shows I don't want to be there. I don't want to, you know, conform to anything. And so
you
then,
so sincerely do not give even the remotest shred of a damn.
Oh no, I don't want to give up anything in my bag. If I want my water, I want my water. And anyway, so I go into this huge stadium, and at some point, all these motorcycles are going around the track, and so I'm just sitting there with my hands in my ears, you know, my fingers in my ears. Like, I mean, God forbid the camera pan on me because I'm just annoyed. But that's not the worst thing. The worst thing is how oblivious I was because it started to rain. So this is so egocentric and narcissistic of me, I should be embarrassed. But here's what happened. I thought, oh, well, it's a good thing I didn't have anything taken out of my bag because I have an umbrella and it's raining. So I put up the umbrella because I don't want to get wet. And I look around, and what? I don't know. There's 20,000 people in this stadium, at least.
40.
Oh, God.
More like 60.
Jeez. Well, that's the size of the city anyway. So I think, like, I'm really stupid the way I'm thinking. I mean, really stupid. I'm thinking, oh, I must be the only one in the stadium that had the foresight to bring an umbrella.
No, they're not allowed, Diane.
I'm stupid me. I mean, because I'm just out of my element. I don't want to be there, even though I think it's nice of the provost and president to have us on the field at halftime and that big... on the big screen, oh, it was horrible. Anyway, so I'm thinking that, and these people from behind tapped me on the shoulder, and they said, you know, we really can't see over your umbrella. We can't see over your umbrella. And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, of course. Nice people from Lawrence, Kansas, and they weren't, you know, they were very nice about it. So then I take down my umbrella, and all the water on it spills out in front of me on the head of one of my colleagues in the College of Business. Oh, it's not funny, but I mean,
no, of course not.
And he says, he says at that point, you always rain on my parade, and I'm just mortified. I mean, he and I are friends, not close friends, but I took a look at my behavior after that, and I thought, I shouldn't be there, because if I'm going to be there, I should at least pay attention to what's going on, so that I don't annoy, you know, so that I'm not in the way of other people who want to be there. So I just decided, which way do I want to go? To go and be aware and conform to norms and treat other people as I would want to be treated, and meaning I should think about whether an umbrella's in their way, because, you know, normally I would. And I thought, no, I just don't want to be there. So I don't go there. It's annoying, especially since I don't have the good sense to adjust my thinking so that I'm not drowning people in water or blocking their view. So anyway, I don't even know why I'm talking about that. What were we talking about, Bob? How did I go down that rabbit hole?
Well, actually, it was because of the continuity of government football field analogy.
Oh, you did it.
It's my fault. It's my fault. It's always my fault. When has it ever not been my fault?
No, you did it. You put me on that football field. Very specifically, you said 40-yard line, 20-yard line, and then the 48-yard line. And it all flooded back to me, Bob.
Well, you'll be pleased to know that Carol says, Diane and my parole officer need to have a chat about what constitutes bad behavior.
Oh, touche, Carol. Touche. I realized that was all mild, but I like to think that typically I have a little more awareness in situations than I exhibited that day. But her point, Carol, your point is well taken. If that's the worst I do these days, then I probably shouldn't even think about it.
But the larger discussion about Hillary, just to share one a little particularly disturbing moment with you. You know how much the issue of mountaintop removal means to me here in Appalachia.
Oh, it's horrible. It's insane.
Well, Hillary was interviewed by West Virginia Public Radio back in March of 2008, when she was running against Barack Obama, and she had made a swing through, Hillbilly Hill. And they asked her about mountaintop removal. And I have here her exact words on the topic.
What is it? What are they?
Okay, are you ready?
Yeah.
There may be screaming. I am concerned about it for all the reasons people state. But I think it's a difficult question because of the conflict between the economic and environmental trade-off that you have here. This is where the screaming starts, Diane. You know, maybe there is a way to recover those mountaintops once they have been stripped of the coal. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we've got to look at this from a practical perspective.
You think she's in a sandbox and you can just, you know, pile some sand up or something. What do you think Bernie would have said? I know he signed your
Well, he hasn't signed it, but he's supportive of it. But I know, well, I don't have to think. I know for a fact that he is diametrically opposed to mountaintop removal. He wants to figure out a way to just end it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, that says a lot about them, doesn't it? The difference between them.
It says enough to determine what my vote is.
Well, I mean, any one of the things we've been talking about would determine my vote. I've been listening to Sanders on Tom Hartman for a long time. I mean, not now, but in prior years, he always had Bernie on Fridays.
Fridays with Bernie, lunch with Bernie. Yeah. And you know, Paul from Parts Unknown pointed out the other night that there are a lot of young people in the United States who have gotten to know Bernie from exactly those segments.
I heard Paul say that. I was surprised. I didn't realize that program had that kind of reach. I heard Paul say that. I was pleasantly surprised because Bernie wasn't running for anything in particular. Well, he wasn't running for president during those years, not per se. And he just says what he means, you know? He is who he is, and I'd love for him to be president. I don't care if all he does is veto, 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 or executive order, executive order, executive order.
Well, I mean, that's basically the definition of any Democratic presidency we get a significant change in the Congress.
Right, years and years, away.
And the thing is, I think, and you know, our course, our conversations are lovely this way. They kind of go all over the place because I sit around and think about nerdy things. I think one of the things that the Republicans have done is they have tried to insulate themselves against ever having happened to them what happened to them, not in 1964 with Barry Goldwater, but what happened to them in 1932 with Herbert Hoover. Mm-hmm. Because see, in the depths of the Great Depression, voters with figuratively pitchforks and torches went to the polls and threw out every Republican they could find.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so FDR had a Republican House and a Republican Senate with which to work and who were willing to work with him because this country was, you know, most people now, we say, Great Depression, okay, Dust Bowl, yada, 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 okay, yeah, mm-hmm. Nobody really understands how close to absolute civil collapse this government and this country was. And as a consequence, that opened one of those rare little windows in our dysfunctional form of government that allowed things to be done that were really, really necessary. And I think with all the gerrymandering and the voter suppression, the Republicans have finally figured out that what they can do, as long as they can persist in those shenanigans, they can make sure that even if they do burn the economy all the way to the ground, Diane.
Oh, dear God.
They need never face any consequences at the ballot box for having done so. Maybe we get a Democratic president, and if so, it'll be incrementalism like and pragmatism like Bill and like Hillary. Or at the most, it'll be a matter of having to govern by executive order. And the threat of a veto,
and appointing one Supreme Court justice, which it's kind of a tepid argument that we should pick a president for that. But I mean, that is another thing that Bernie could do.
Well, it is, and
it's not insignificant if he did it.
Well, but the other part of it is that Bernie really believes in a revolution of sorts. You know, nobody's talking about polishing the dust off the tumbrils or anything. But he would be. I take him at his word. Okay, he seems like an honest man. He would be willing to go out and politic against this no good Congress.
Yeah, well, I would hope so. Truman. I think that was one of Truman's favorite pastimes, if I do.
Yeah, the do nothing. What was it?
Yeah,
99th Congress.
Pulling up some history in my mind, because he's from Independence, Missouri, so it's not like we don't hear about him. Do nothing. Yeah.
And so, I mean, I think there's wisdom in what he's doing. That demographic, the younger voters, is huge. If you can get them going in the right direction,
it's 18 to 35, I think, the millennials. They're different, and I would hope they'd act on it like Paul suggested. But you know, a long time ago when I was doing my master's in economics, I was one of the few economics master's program in the country that really examined the Great Depression in some detail. In a lot of detail, actually, especially, and I became a Keynesian. And because then we'd studied neo-Keynesian, you know, post-Keynesian. But one thing I remember, you know, John Maynard Keynes paraphrasing him, in the long run, we're all dead. Because the supply-siders and the Laffer types, Laffer wasn't around then, of course, but, You know, at that time, the economists were saying, in the middle of being on the precipice, they were saying, and then Hoover quoted them, as I recall, the classical economists were saying, well, in the long run, it, you know, business will respond and it'll come back. In the long run, business will invest and in the long run. So I, you know, I don't have, I mean, Laffer, when Sam Brownback, I'm calling as an ordinary citizen, I will
yes.
say.
Yes.
When, you know, Laffer, hiring Laffer, I'm just like, we laughed at Laffer when I was doing my master's in economics. Of course, when I was doing my PhD in business, I was actually surrounded by more conservative types then and not necessarily knee-deep into economics, which is why I went over to the economics department for part of my doctoral work, because I never like to lose sight of how those economists keep propping up people to prop up these politicians. And it's the same, you know, in the long run, it'll trickle down or whatever. Well, I can tell you the experiment in Kansas is getting worse. The outcomes are getting worse. The projections are getting worse. And I have something I'd like to say about that that fits with the Moran theme.
Absolutely.
Well, I listened. I should have been working harder today. I work a lot at home. When I don't, you know, actually teach. So I was listening to Bill Otto on Radio Free Kansas because there's really no place else I can get such a detailed description of what actually is happening in Topeka, because Bill Otto was a former rep of the 9th District and they gerrymandered him out, but he still knows where the bodies are buried and he knows how to interpret stuff. And by the way, Mike Cadell, the host of that program, is going to run for the House. He's going to run to be a representative in the 47th District.
Good for him.
Imagine such a thing. He's already griping about, I mean, I don't care if he gripes or not. I like him. But he's already kind of, you know, griping about the fact that if he would win, he couldn't wear his bib overalls into Topeka and be on the House floor. And I'm just like, I'll try. Why don't you win and just try? You know, I mean, you know, Kansas is all in those people on the House floor. They're trying to say what women can wear in their committees. You know, they just have to try to craft rules about that, as if there's nothing else they need to be paying attention to. And the women in Kansas, the representatives of Kansas, even the Republicans, what I read is they're like, don't you men have anything better to do? You know, the women in Kansas, they don't just, they're not real quiet if they get riled up. So I was listening to Bill Otto talk about some stuff and Mike Cadell talk about how he's going to run. I hope he has a chance, but Bill Otto is an old time Republican, you know, and he's talking about the fact that these people in Topeka aren't Republicans. To quote him, they're what does he call them? He calls them cranks. He calls them stuff like that, cranks. They're no good. They're anyway. So what the governor's office did lately was to hire this firm to do an efficiency study of the budget. Huh. And I got this through Dwayne Gosin, you know, that budget director we had on campus explaining the current budget stuff to us. But Bill Otto was talking about it too, so I looked it up. Brownback and company hired this firm for $3 million to do an efficiency study of the Kansas budget. And that was $1.6 million over the next bidder. Okay, so what happened is that basically this firm said you have to align your revenues with costs. Would you like to be paid $3 million to say that to Sam Brownback?
I'm holding out for five.
But anyway, so we are in big trouble here, and they pay this firm 1.6 million more than the next bidder. And then when you look into it more carefully, this firm has given campaign contributions to Republican governors and to Brownback. But they won't comment on that. You know, I mean, they didn't take the lowest bid. And there's also some controversy on the types of recommendations this firm makes. And the name of this firm, I'm pulling it up, is it's a New York-based consulting firm, Alvarez and Marsal. And
they get around.
But there was a firm that I think it was Boston Consulting that would have done it for $1.6 million less, but they were known to have given campaign contributions to a Democratic candidate of some kind.
Well, now, Carol tells me, and this sounds pretty horrifying, that Kansans were told today they won't be getting their tax refunds because Kansas doesn't have the money.
Right. Yes, Carol, yes, I heard that because I was listening to the, you know, I was tuned into Radio Free Kansas and these things. Because typically I'd just be sitting home doing research. And
what happened to dim leaders saying, it's your money?
Yeah, well, actually, those that are filed on time, like I already got my refund back. And believe me, when I look at my state refund, I feel like burning it. You know, it's like, I don't want this. I know where this needs to go. It's ridiculous. But for those who filed amended returns or late returns, that's who's affected right now. But the point is, this is going to be how the cycle looks. You know, this is what we can expect in the future. Disruptions like this.
Well, I mean, what recourse do people have who have been shafted out of money that they didn't have to pay?
Yeah. Well,
I mean, can you sue the state of Kansas, or does it have immunity? I imagine it has immunity.
Well, I mean, the whole thing about that thing about education is supposedly at the Kansas Supreme Court, because our Constitution says that all children must have equal amounts of education funds spent on them, no matter where they live or what they're, you know, what they look like or whatever. But when someone asked Dwayne Gosin, that budget director, what will happen if the Supreme Court rules against Kansas in the new block grant for education and, you know, that nonsense, Gosin said, I don't know what the Supreme Court can rule what it will, because there's no money to fix it. So I don't know how we could sue them, but I will tell you where Kansans have drawn the line, at least recently, and that is, and I've been wondering, it's like I watched this horror show. It's just like a nightmare. And I'm like, where will Kansans draw some lines? Well, here's one place. The Education Committee came up with this bill for more consolidation, educational consolidation. Well, there are already rural kids, you know, being bused an hour and a half away from their homes to school and an hour and a half back. But there were so many emails and phone calls over the weekend to Topeka that they backed off from that. And Bill Otto was commenting on that. I mean, they were going to consolidate more schools to save money. And in Kansas, it's kind of touchy. You know, I grew up in a suburb of Kansas City and the Johnson County, and they don't really like spending taxes on any. You know, they want to be Chevy Chase, you know, that place where taxpayers can just spend on their own schools and to hell with the rest of the state. And so it's already a touchy subject, consolidation or reallocations, but to help the budget, presumably, the Education Committee was drafting up more consolidation, and it just lit up Kansans. And they backed off of it. Now, Bill Otto said you have to watch them because they usually come back and it'll be an amendment to some other bill or something like that. He said, but they did feel the heat and back off. And I'm like, okay, so there's a boundary there. But then he contradicted himself a little. He said, On the other hand, I'm not sure we have to worry about it, because the last time Kansas consolidated school in 1965, Kansans basically did not send most of those representatives back. There was almost a clean sweep, according to Bill Otto.
But how long ago?
65. But he says Kansas.
Not going to be as easy this time, Diane.
No, I don't know what's going to happen, but I listen to him because he's like this old timer who has his finger on the pulse, and he's still in Topeka a lot. He says Kansans won't remember that. He said Kansans don't necessarily know that history. He said, but the people in the Capitol know that history. He said, trust me, they know that in 65 there was practically a clean sweep of anyone who voted for consolidation. He said, there's enough of a memory that it's going to be in play. I don't know. I'm quoting him. But so, you know, there's a boundary there for now. And Bob, I want to backtrack just a little bit. You know that firm that's hired for $3 million to give Kansans recommendation.
Right, the not low bid firm.
Oh, yeah, but not. Okay, so I'm reading an article. Oh, I read it. I have it in front of me now. I'm not reading it now, but I read it before I called. A lot of eyebrows were raised, so to speak, about selecting that firm, because Jindal had hired them for Louisiana, and so people knew some of their recommendations, you know, the kind of recommendations they give. Okay, so if I may just read this two sentences of it. For example, this consulting firm said the state could save $137,000 a year by allowing pregnant women on Medicaid the option of giving birth at home or at non-hospital birthing centers using midwives and doulas instead of limiting payment to hospitals and licensed doctors. I think I'm going to vomit. I mean, this is what we paid $3 million
for.
And another recommendation was thinner asphalt overlays on highways. Oh, mm-hmm.
Wait.
Uh-huh.
They want to thin the asphalt?
Yeah. We only go from, you know, -112 degrees in 1 year. If you can imagine the stress.
And the trucks and the it, yeah. So
yes.
did they suggest making all Kansans add a third of a cup, a third of a pound of oat flour to every pound of hamburger? I mean, Jesus.
Oh, what? I know. See, this is why I'm bringing it up, because, I mean, it's so insulting. First of all, $1.6 million over and above the next bid, and two reputable, you know, consulting firms were other bidders on this. But these were the ones who gave to Brownback, and his office won't comment. Of course, he could say that a legislative committee did this, and that apparently is true, but it was the Democratic person on the committee. She said it was rushed through, there was no due diligence, and so, you know, it doesn't look good to me. So, you know, those are the kind of recommendations that are brought up in this article. I'm not saying that that's all of them. Oh yeah, and install GPS devices on all state vehicles to ensure state employees are always using the most efficient and direct routes. You know, this is not a complicated state.
Isn't Kansas laid out on a
I-70 and then get off? And,
yeah, isn't Kansas laid out on a grid?
It's about. Oh God, I almost didn't call in tonight because it's just putting me over the edge.
Well, no, you've got a crisis unfolding there.
And we've got
one unfolding here, Diane. I mean, you've probably heard me mention several times in the last week the fact that, you know, there's a $350 million budget deficit. And, of course, we have a constitutional mandate to balance the budget.
Yeah, we do, too. Yep.
And that is, well, that's going to prove to be quite the challenge. And you know who is going to take it on the chin. And meanwhile, this teabagger legislature probably will reduce the severance tax on coal.
I heard that. Didn't you talk about that Friday or Thursday?
Yeah, I think I did.
I heard that. What a stupid.
Why? You know what? I think we ought to just start paying the coal industry to not dig coal. I mean, you think they'd like that? This is crazy.
Yeah.
And it's going to get real Lord of the Flies around here real fast.
Oh, dear God. Oh, I'm
if you start imposing across the board cuts, well, I mean, I'm sure they'll cut the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection down to the bone. They weren't very effective in the first place, but let's just replace the WVDEP with a damned answering system and a phone line.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had my own experience with that particular outfit today because we had one of those, you know, I mean, it is what it is. Agnes and I had one of those really, really bad nights last night. And neither of us could sleep worth a damn because we were choking on coal smoke.
Oh, that's horrible. From next door?
Yeah, from the neighbors.
Yeah.
See, that house sits down in a little swale, and I am basically eye level with about probably 20 feet above that chimney.
Oh.
And so it just wafts straight across the road and straight across the hill, and it's like there's a bullseye on the house.
Jeez.
And so I got up this morning and just called the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection. I was really nice, Diane. I wasn't a screaming, you know, Lulu or anything. And I said, I just want to ask a question. My neighbors and I are getting choked by somebody who's just burning raw coal. Mm. And she said, well, are they burning it as a direct source of heat? And I said, yes. Apparently, there's smoke coming out the chimney. And she said, well, there's nothing we can do about that.
Mm.
It's perfectly legal. Now, if you're burning coal to generate electricity, you have to follow certain EPA guidelines and regulations about scrubbers and catching the dust and everything.
That's how Pittsburgh got cleaned up.
Yeah, this is just raw coal smoke pouring straight out of a chimney.
Oh.
And straight into us.
Mm. Mm.
And there is not a damn thing they can do about it.
Mm.
I mean, it wouldn't even be worth sending an inspector out, she went on to say.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't tell somebody not to burn coal. She said, now, if they were burning brush out in their yard, we can do something about that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, there aren't that many people who just stack up some bituminous and you know, put a torch to it.
Yeah, that's bad.
But I mean, that's just one example. The education is going to get slaughtered in this state.
Oh yeah. Well, you know,
and we don't have any. Maybe the argument can be made out there in Kansas that you had a little bit of room to give on education.
Well, they.
That argument has never been able to be made in this state.
Oh yeah, so it'll just get bad right away. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, no, it's already bad.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, the second anniversary of the Freedom disaster last year, the West Virginia legislature decided to gut what little bit of regulation we put on above ground storage tanks. Well, we won't be able to do much in the way of enforcing any of that either. Fracking will go absolutely hog wild.
Yeah.
They'll I'm sure the mountaintop removal permits will just pour in because they like to have the permits even if they're not mining. Because if you've got the permit, you've got 5 years to get started, and you just, you know, you send a dozer in and scrape the earth and say, well, we got started. That keeps the clock ticking.
they don't even have any kind of sensitivity about timing. Not even that. I mean,
no, these are classic Koch brothers teabaggers that are running this legislature now.
I know, but that thing about, you know, to do away with the severance tax, I mean, it's kind of part of a pattern that they don't even wait a decent interval.
Wait for the body to get cold? No.
Yeah, I know. I mean, not that that would make it right or anything like that. I'm just saying they don't have the... I mean, no wonder they're so focused on the anal area. I swear to God, their reasoning is just...
Oh, I'm sure we'll get around to that, too. We're in the process of passing a freedom of conscience bill.
Oh?
Yeah, that'll make the Coke purchased teabaggers in our legislature have introduced a freedom of conscience bill that will allow EMTs to let somebody lay on the ground and die if they suspect them of being homosexuals.
Oh, Bob, you're kidding me.
No.
No, this is below the first chakra. This is, I mean, no wonder they focus on that area of the body so much. They can't reason any higher.
It's barbaric. It's barbaric. I think that's the word we're looking for.
Remember when I told you I saw farm boys doing hatha yoga in Central Park?
Yeah, right.
I mean, I'm being a little flip, but presumably that's to get their higher consciousness, you know, whatever. I mean, it's really, they're not really doing it just to be limber, not hatha yoga. These people you're talking about, boy, they're forget meditation. They're cognitive, more reasoning. I teach those models. I don't even think they make it to the lowest realm. Really? There must be a realm lower than the lowest realm of moral reasoning. That's where they reside. Because you're telling me they have the imagination to even think someone homosexual may be on the ground bleeding and I or one of my comrades might have to. I mean, how does this play out in their mind? Why are they thinking this?
I think we have ignored, and perhaps to our detriment, the fact, you know, supposedly the Koch brothers don't care about all that social morality stuff that seems to so.
I don't think they do.
Well, but the thing is, you get a package deal. If you get a teabagger legislator who's taking Koch money, they've got it networked so that they're also taking, like, money from friends of families for American great families or something. So that you know, anybody who's doing the one is also doing the other.
I'm just watching for the time that starts breaking apart. I mean, that coalition can't last on everything. I mean, I just don't see it being that comfortable together at some juncture. Because I know libertarians, they don't give a think about that other stuff. They don't. They don't care about bedrooms. They don't. You know, they don't care.
Well, they're not supposed to. I mean, for instance, if we have, when they first sat down last year in the first legislative session of this legislature, when they first sat down last year, a bunch of them had that urine colored snake flag on their desk instead of the flag of West Virginia or instead of the flag of the United States.
Oh God!
And you know, so that's supposed to mean that, you know, they're all liberty oriented and libertarian, yada yada yada, BS BS BS. But you know, Rand Paul and that thing on his head, who is supposed to be this paragon of libertarian purity, you know, he'll tell you that a woman doesn't have a right to control the workings of her own body, and that's not libertarian at all.
No, he's pandering, isn't he?
Sure.
He must be. Yeah. Well, it's strange, and what I like to watch is when that enters, and as it has done a couple of times, a boardroom, and then they don't want any part. They don't want it. You know, they will alienate some of their stockholders, some of their consumers, some of their business partners by just moving one way or the other. I'm not talking about that dude at Chick-fil-A who just went out you know, that CEO who just said, we don't want gays in here. And, you know, I mean, he took a stand, and he was in the South when he did it. But, I mean, most businesses don't want to be anywhere near that kind of
Well, as I think thing. This is a pretty good explanation, Diane. Carol points out that when you get these types, social issues are the trade-out for the economic issues.
Well, it certainly keeps people's eyes.
You know, if we do your economic stuff, you have to shut up while we do this evil social stuff.
Yeah, I guess that would work most of the time, but yeah, I'm just watching for the time when, you know, situations where it doesn't work, and I'm, you know,
well,
I can't
but I don't.
Right now.
but what do you do? What do you do when you have sufficiently instupidated? There's a word.
Yep.
What do you do when you sufficiently instupidated a population that you can do anything to them that you want to as long as you tell them it's what Jesus wants?
Yeah, we're just in such deep trouble. We're in deep trouble. I don't have the words because, you know, there are times I swear like a sailor I don't want to do it on the air. I like it when other people do, but I mean, we're in deep trouble. I mean, I can tell you I walk around Kansas and I don't find that degree of stupidity in a lot of places, not just in this university town. But apparently it's playing out on the macro level big time, obviously. It's swaying politics. Even though a lot of people you might meet in your daily life are too smart to get caught up in it. But then I guess when they go in the booth to vote, I mean, what choices do they have? We have only one or two choices, and we have to take what we get. Bernie's not so great on, you know, the Gaza Strip. He's not, in my mind. But, you know, that's just one example. I can't get everything with one vote. So these Republicans, they just vote on, some of them vote on, they don't want to pay taxes, so they don't want to take more taxes, so they'll take all that other stuff with it. Because after all, it's not really bothering them if someone dies, I guess. What are your state legislators thinking of? I mean, I know you've just told me they have those flags on their desk and they, you know, they've got that lobbying and stuff. But I mean, really, with a straight face, they're proposing to let someone bleed to death?
Well, I mean, anything.
Oh, well, no wonder I watch episodes of Star Trek at night because
this is a tiny little state. Diane, you know, there's only a million. There's only a million and a half of us.
Five electoral votes, right?
Yeah. And so when you get the kind of horrifying numbers we're getting, for instance, by the end of this legislative term, it will probably be legal for anybody who wants to, who's above the age of 18, to purchase a gun and carry it concealed anywhere they want to.
Yep.
Well, square that with this fact. Like I said, there's only a million and a half of us.
Yeah.
Every 31 hours, a West Virginian is killed with a firearm.
Oh, my Lord. Every 31 hours? Every other day? Or
every day, you know.
Every day and a half?
Yeah, it's not even a day and a half.
Yeah, right. Every day and a quarter
And the argument of the right wing on this is that, well, now let's see, let me find, none of the states with permit-less concealed carry laws has descended into chaos.
Well, chaos isn't the issue, is it? I mean, is that what it will take for, they've just told us what it will take for them to stop chaos. Because, you know, otherwise.
Brilliant.
They just told us, right? I mean, in that sentence. Oh, God. Well,
and then and just because, and I hate to, I was going to talk about it this evening anyway.
Hmm?
But this is, I mean, this is a good time. Yeah, it's awful.
Yeah. Oh.
It's a story that comes out of Irondale, Alabama. It's and you know it's the same setup every time, Diane. Grandpa kept a pistol in his nightstand in case there was ever a intruder into his home.
Oh dear God.
And of course, Grandma and Grandpa were looking after the little ones.
Oh no! Oh no, Bob! Please! Oh no! Oh.
Yeah, I mean, so. So the little 3-year-old grandson picked up great grandpa's pistol from the nightstand and shot it and shot his older sister in the head.
Yeah. Oh dear.
Yeah. Thanks, Wayne LaPierre. I mean, see, there's no justification for that. You don't get to say, well, you know, God moves in mysterious ways.
Well, you know, you said what they'll say, the gun went off. There's no way, the gun went off.
Well, mercifully, no, not mercifully, but actually in the Washington Post story, the pistol lay on the bedroom nightstand, loaded and untouched, and then it was in the 3-year-old's hands, pointed toward his older sister. A moment later, Kimberly Rylander was on the floor, bleeding from a wound to her head after her younger brother accidentally shot her. So at least they didn't say the gun went off.
Oh, I see. My God, a 3-year-old has such aim? Good Lord.
Her grandma was laying the towel on her head and laid down there and started praying. She was praying.
Oh.
I was praying. My wife was screaming and praying. Nobody knows how that feels until you experience it. The girl's grandfather, Joel Watson, told WIAT.
Oh, God.
The 9-year-old girl was flown to Children's of Alabama Hospital Saturday, where she died of her injuries.
Mm.
Irondale Police Chief Ken Atkinson told AL.com and WIAT that the children's great-grandfather had left a loaded pistol on his nightstand Saturday morning, not knowing that the children were coming over. He wasn't home at the time of the shooting, but the children's grandmother and uncle, whom police detectives are now interviewing, were, though they didn't know there was a gun in the room where the children were playing.
Because adults are supposed to be in charge and know better.
Police Chief Atkinson said, it appears to be a tragic accident.
Oh, well, that's perceptive.
Local TV station WBRC reported it doesn't seem that any charges will be filed, citing Irondale police.
Well, they'll all be in hell from here on out. I mean, put them in jail or not, it's hell. What you're talking about is hell. It'll be hell for them. It's hell to contemplate it, and it's hell to know it'll happen again, and it's hell to know the state legislators won't. It won't register with them that something's not working here.
But I want to know, and you know, we try to do nuance, we try to do depth here. I want to know what's going on inside great grandpappy's head.
Alzheimer's, dementia.
Well, but you got to understand, and this is going to sound crappy. But, you know, being a great-granddaddy in Alabama doesn't necessarily mean you're 90.
Oh, yeah, sure. No,
I understand, you got a 14-year-old with a baby, and then the 14-year-old has a baby, and you're 28, yeah. And that 14-year-old, and then you're 45, yeah. You're 50.
Right. And you still know what a gun can do. You know.
But, you know, it's freedom, so you just leave it laying there on the nightstand.
Oh, my God. Well, I think I told you this.
Because, you know, it's useless to you if you don't have it loaded with one in the chamber. When the blue-helmeted Obama UN troops cross over the Tallapoosa River and come a-marching on you, you're not going to have time to clear around into the chamber.
Well, that really helped that guy out in Oregon, whatever, I can't remember his name, that one who apparently didn't know.
Oh, Finkham?
Yeah, yeah. He was, I don't know, I didn't see the video, but probably grabbing for the gun on his shoulder, but then maybe on his leg, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I think it's really overrated, isn't it? The presence of a gun in deterring anything, really. In many of these situations, I mean, remember I told you I had to get that gun out of my father's house?
Yeah, yeah, and like, right. I mean, the article goes on. I mean, this is decent reporting. Still in disbelief, her maternal grandfather, Rodney Watson, told WBRC, you know, I've always had this thought that this could only happen to someone else. Mm-hmm. You know, you only hear about these things, but when it hits home, it's hard. He described Kimberly, or Kimmy, as many in her family knew her, as a precious angel. She was a beautiful child, straight-A student. She loved God. She loved singing at church.
Oh, dear.
So well, they loved God so much. Why do they need? Why do they need? Why do they need a goddamn gun, Diane?
And why do we need public policy if people just love God? I mean, it's such a ridiculous, you know. And my understanding is that a pediatrician could not even ask that family about this.
Well, you know, right? And there's no commandment that says thou shalt not shoot thy big sissy with thy great grandpa's freedom protector either.
This whole thing.
I mean, I feel dirty. I was just sarcastic. I feel dirty about that, and I'm sorry, Diane.
Why?
But
what did you say that made you feel that way? I didn't hear it. I mean, you mean you're being a little sarcastic? Well, what else can you do? I mean, how else can you talk about something so absurd? And the reasoning that we hear under such circumstances, it's absurd. I'm sure you have compassion for these people. I do, too.
My heart is aching for these people.
I know, but they're absurd nevertheless. I mean, it's an absurdity. You know, I wouldn't go up to them and make them feel any worse. I wouldn't. But the people, you know, who keep pushing guns on us, on everyone, you know we're supposed to have guns on campus here.
I know. I mean, I brought it up because we talked about the everybody at K-State has to have a gun, right?
Well, I mean, or can have a gun. You know what? I try to get into people's minds when, you know, like, it's hard to get in these people's minds. However, they do say what they are thinking, and I still can't. For some reason, I still don't think I can get into their minds because I don't understand the logic. But, like, I was telling someone in my family who I love, and I try not to get into, you know, fights, particularly because my elderly mother doesn't want us to, so I don't. But I was telling my sister, I'm like, well, you know, there'll be open carry on campus. I'm really not happy about it. And she says, why? You don't have to carry one. I'm just like, I just like stopped in my tracks. Like, I mean, what does that sound like to you, Bob? I mean, why? You don't have to carry one. I mean, like, so. So what am I?
Do I get a choice if when it comes to getting shot by one?
I just stopped talking because I don't.
Does everybody who doesn't have to carry one get some sort of a choice as to when Cletus is going to fumble his book bag and the gun's going to just go off?
We could talk about this for. I just stopped talking because. I mean, someone in my own family can't imagine why I'm not happy. And if something happened to me, that the financial support I'm providing for my mother would presumably stop. I mean, I hate to go there, but I mean, I'm just saying, sometimes I think these Republicans are not even thinking past some meme. I mean, given what I just said, presumably, it would not be to her benefit for something to happen to me. Because then she'd be totally responsible for my mom. You know what I'm saying? But, and I know maybe you think that's a little bit too tangential, but that's going into my through my mind when I get a response like that. There's just no other path of reasoning going on, even that self-interested. Why? You don't have to carry one. Oh, dear God. Anyway, that might have been a little too personal to share, but
it wasn't.
I try to figure out and this didn't cause a rift or anything. It just caused me to think, what is going on in that mind of a person I love but is really very Republican? My son is in New York. He doesn't get it either. He just doesn't even, you know, he comes back and he's very nice and polite and then flies back. And there was another thing. Like, I was talking to my niece and I love my niece. And I was like, well, you know, there's someone in the family who just, you know, said they're atheists. Well, my son is, for one thing. I mean, I don't, you know, why do we even have to talk about it? But my niece was saying, well, you know, this is, I'm Christian, and so this is taking something away from me. This is, I'm not happy about it. And I'm like, what is it taking away from you? I'm just using personal examples, Bob, because that brings it right to the ground, you know? Presumably good people. I think my family, they have their good points. They're presumably intelligent, all that. Someone in the family is an atheist, so that's taking something away from my niece. I mean, she said it. So we've seen this play out on the larger stage, right?
Yeah.
And I just stopped in my tracks, and I'm like, honey, what is this taking away from you? You know? I don't understand. What is it? Because someone in the family is atheist. I said, by the way, my son, your dear cousin, is an atheist. Did you know? Silence. I'm not griping about anyone in my family. I'm just saying those two comments, you know, open carry. Well, you don't have to carry one, you know. And then another conversation. Someone's atheist, and that's taking away from me. And I'm like, and in both cases, I know I'm seeing, I'm close to the mind that is on the political screen that I hear about every day as driving this country. I'm seeing it in a microcosm. You see why I'm bringing it up? And I still don't get it. I don't get it. The reasoning. Where is this coming from? Forget it's my family. We know it's out there, you know? Where? How does that work?
Well, our buddy Cindy out in the Great Northwest says, tell Diane the truth, Bob. Nothing is going on in her mind.
Cindy, a big amygdala. I shouldn't say that. I mean, I really shouldn't say that, but because it sounds like I don't like my family, and I do.
No. Nobody thinks that. I mean, Carol just said. You know, does Christianity take something from Diane's son?
I don't even, you know, I just don't even understand. And it goes back to someone's gay and they're bleeding on the ground. Well, first of all, what has someone being gay got to do with anyone else? I mean, so there's some juncture in this mindset that is so egocentric and protective of some fragile identity, and let me
share something with you, Diane.
Yes, please.
This just came in from Steve in Vermont.
Oh, Vermont.
Mm. He said, "Here's a paragraph from Chris Hedges' latest at Truth Digging, and it seems to dovetail almost seamlessly with what we're talking about here. We do not possess the intellectual skills, and this is by design, that permit us to question power, to see ourselves as part of a long human continuum. We have forgotten or never been taught that each individual must be seen as an ultimate end if we are to retain any human decency and hope. Once we depersonalize others, once we forget who we are and where we came from, we make evil possible. Quote, act so that humanity, both in your own person and that of others, be used as an end in itself and never as a mere means.
Immanuel Kant's second formulation of the categorical imperative from the great age of the Enlightenment philosophers. That's what that is.
Yep, that's exactly
and
what
I
that
think
is. That,
I mean, that's part of what we go over in business ethics, and it's a great thought. It's a great.
Well, what Chris Hedges draws out of that is, if we cannot think morally, if we live devoid of empathy, if our advancement comes at the expense of the other, if we lose touch with the wisdom of the past, we cannot rebel. And if we do not rebel, we will sustain a system that will ultimately slay us.
Yeah. But, you know, the flip side of it is they think they're rebelling.
Yeah, when all they're doing is conforming.
Well, they're seeing that this other action takes away from them, so they rebel. You know, like the freedom thing. You know, someone else shouldn't have a right because it takes away my right. That's the kind of thing that goes on. So they end up rebelling in the opposite way that Chris Hedges is talking about. They rebel because they see anything different, any extension of a right to others, as a deficit in their right.
Right, because everything is a zero-sum game.
Yeah. Well, and that...
You know, if you have more freedom, that means somewhere along the way, I have to have lost some freedom.
And that's one reason I broke...
It's a mercantilist approach.
Yeah, that's one reason I broke with economics, because that philosophy is embedded in the economic theory that's taught in most universities. Not all, but yeah, that's embedded in that. I won't go into the whole thing, but yeah, zero sum. You already know that, and then the self interest that takes other.
But there are clever people out there, Diane, who have found ways to make that a reality. Hmm. And you know, for instance, if gay people can get married, your marriage becomes, over there, some wingnut, their marriage is somehow diminished.
You see, I don't get that.
I don't either. And there's a reason, because it's not true. It's not intellectually, logically, processually, it is not true. But they have been taught to think that it is.
And I don't see how that's possible. I don't see how in walking around in the real world that and seeing reality that's
because their
possible.
Invisible friend is used as justification.
I still don't get it. I don't get it. Because the invisible friend said other things. So
no, but the invisible friend has the power to loves you so much that he has the power to torment you for all eternity.
That's the old God. I don't know. I mean...
I mean, there's too many people out there who believe this stuff discount it, Diane.
I don't know. I mean, I think sometimes it has to happen to them, you know, and that.
No, because make no mistake, okay? Great Aunt Christy Watson and maternal grandfather Rodney Watson are not going to go out there and join Moms for Gun Sense.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there have been five shootings by toddlers in the month of January. You know, the story from what, a year and a half, 2 years ago, of the little boy who shot his baby sissy with his cricket toddler rifle and killed her with a .22 caliber bullet. And they went and the first thing everybody in the county says is, don't turn this here into a political issue. This is Kentucky. Everybody had a gun.
And they don't want you to talk about it during the period of grief, and it's just
God's will. She was too much of a precious angel to live on this planet anymore. And see, yeah. I'm being an ass right now, and I know it. And I'm,
I don't think so.
Another hunk of brimstone just got thrown on my little personal hellfire.
Well, I don't see it as being insensitive. I mean, we're talking about toddlers dying, and you're sensitive to it. My God, you're alive. I mean, Bob?
Yes.
My battery on my landline phone is going, and I have kept you a long time.
Oh no, but I would not have let you stay a minute over your welcome. You are always welcome here, and it's always a joy.
Oh well, it's you know, we've talked about many things, and it's reality, and so I'm gonna bid you a good night and hope the coal smoke goes the other way. I guess that's the best wish I can give you.
Well, I thank you. I have a feeling we're gonna be bathed in it for the next week.
So sorry about that. I'll catch you later, Bob.
All right. Take care, Diane. Be well. It is always a pleasure hearing from you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Even when I'm really mad, huh? Okay.
Okay. Bye now. Good night.
So long.
The marvelously, and I do mean marvelously coherent, Diane from Kansas, Stan. And we did cover a lot of ground. A whole lot of ground. But on any given night at this on this program, there's a lot of ground to cover. And so, I mean, I read this story about the little girl in Alabama, and you know it makes you heart sick. And I actually think, you know, is there any purpose that is served by sharing a story like that? And I cannot help but come to the conclusion that there is. Because we have to be aware that this is, that you know, there and it's not like you don't know. But there are consequences for these foolhardy acts by these foolhardy people. And I love that, Steve in Vermont, I love that quote from Chris Hedges, from Immanuel Kant via Chris Hedges. Because it speaks to somehow that I am. Maybe I need to ask my doctor if Think No More is right for me, because I'm irretrievably guilty of thinking of other people as human beings. Yes, we have our fun on this program, and we clown around. And people who choose to make fools of themselves in public circumstances, well, we have our fun and we critique. Thank you, Devin. Devin says, may the winds be ever in your favor. not around here. Not around here. But there is an, you know, there's an aching humanity out there that wants things to get better. And a significant portion of the power elite in this country are lying to them in telling them what will do that. Ted Cruz is lying. Marco Rubio is lying. Jebbia is lying. Jebbia reported assets of something like $29 million. Hillary has not released her income tax returns yet, but Bernie released his. He had around $200,000 of income last year, most of which came from his $174,000 senatorial salary. That guy is a lot more likely to understand, to be able to think in those Kantian terms than a multi, oh my God, multi-millionaire. I believe that. And we know how dangerous I think the word believe is. But Jebbia is a liar. Kasich is a liar. Because anybody that tells you if we just have less government, we'll have more freedom. If we just make sure that we fire a few more public workers, your life will get materially better. It won't. See, this is the perversion of John Donne. you know, John Donne is the one who wrote, you know, no man is an island unto himself. I am a part of the main. Ask not for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee. You know, when one man is lost, I am diminished. Well, that's true. That's true. But we have an entire political philosophy that somehow or another manages to convince around 47% of the country to put its trust in it. And says, no. It's all about you. You're all that matters. We're all in this together, but we're all individuals. I'm not. No, you get the idea. Those folks in Alabama don't have a goddamn thing in common with T. Rump and may very well vote for him. And T. Rump doesn't give a good goddamn about any of them. But neither does Rubio and neither does Ayatollah Ted. And I'll go ahead and say that my personal opinion is that the divorce is pretty well complete between Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton and working America.
Son, I remember my humble roots. I remember when I made my first $10 million.
Bullshit. So, you know, where does this country go if it does not see the advancement, our advancement as a nation in as a function of the advancement of themselves? If we abandon the principle that when one does well, we all do well, and instead it's a zero-sum economic Mad Max game, where does that take us? Somalia with cable. That's where. And I don't want to, you know, I don't think there's much. I mean, you can stick a fork in this country and turn it over because it's done. If we let ourselves any further devolve into survival of the richest, which is what we're talking about. So that's Moran Monday for this 8th day of February 2016. Again, happy birthday, John Fox, and happy birthday, Margie. Another birthday tomorrow. We will apparently begin the program tomorrow with a $400 fundraising goal because it's been, the PayPal and the email have been, you know, quiet as the tomb this evening. It would be great if we could knock some of that out for those of you who listened in delay, if we could knock some of that out, all of that out, before we get to tomorrow. Either way, I'll be here as long as everything's still on. Snow's falling. Cross your fingers for our antiquated, rickety, coal-fired power grid. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Thank you, each and every one of you, who share your precious, finite time in listening and participating in this ongoing discussion. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And yes, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all. Here comes Malloy. Well, I mean, not on this channel, but y'all know how to get there.